And let me just introduce Raphael. Tonight we're very pleased to welcome him to our monthly Soul Support System Zoom classes. So Raphael has been involved in Soul Support Systems for many years. I know him more recently through his work practicing and training others in the heart thread modality. He's also done significant work in its expansion, including creating Healing the Scars, a nonprofit that supports people who have suffered through war, trauma, and violence. And he's also one of the primary folks behind the scenes currently shepherding HeartThread's considerable expansion. He offers HeartThread sessions and trainings, as well as intuitive readings and channeled messages. So as with most of the teachers who have been providing these monthly classes, Raphael does other things as well. He's been an EMT. He has served a number of years in the Israeli Defense Forces, and he's also an accomplished musician. In particular, he has studied music and instrument technology. He plays the harp, and he's created a business making harps and other instruments. And consistent with his being drawn towards healing, he studied harp therapy. He's also done significant work around water awareness and healing the earth. And if you've ever spent any time with Raphael, you'll soon learn that he's a bit of a scholar in a lot of areas, a lot of information, and makes all kinds of connections with different things. So, I'm going to mute people. I'm getting some feedback here. So Raphael also has deep ties to Israel and ancient Jerusalem. And as you can imagine, given his interest, he's also very engaged in evolving consciousness and the development of the new world. And I believe, I'll let him speak, but I believe this is the launching point for his discussion tonight on the legacy of the Essenes. So without further ado, Raphael.
Thank you so much. That was a little more than I am aware of myself, but good to know that I'm an accomplished musician. Thank you so much. My biggest issue around this class is getting everything in, but we'll see how and where it goes. So I first want to let everybody know what drew me to the whole subject of these scenes. And much of it starts when I was young, and because I'm Jewish, you know, I did Hebrew for my to learn to read for my bar mitzvah. But because South Africa was a bit of a dead end in those days for me in terms of my future, I knew I wanted to go live in Israel, and so I pursued the Hebrew a little longer after my bar mitzvah, and I was exposed to some interesting material, you know, more in depth on that subject. But at the same time, I was also very drawn to studying English literature, and I did move to Israel. I was in the army, and I had some interesting experiences. After the Six-Day War, I was in a patrol unit in Sinai, and all of a sudden, we were accompanying a jeep that showed up. It looked like the chief rabbi had decided that a particular mountain was definitely Mount Sinai. And so they arrived and stuck up a plaque, like a big sign pointing to the mountain, suggesting that it was Sinai. And while I was studying, after I went to the army, I ended up at the Hebrew University studying English literature. And I was very drawn to Shakespeare. And part of the training to be, to learn more of the literature was you were required to have a background in biblical understanding. I knew quite a bit of the Old Testament, but I read the New Testament. And I was very much of a skeptic. I didn't quite believe that what was written was exactly what was true. And so in my experience of reading the New Testament and also looking back at the Old Testament, I started to realize that a lot had been changed. A lot had been orchestrated, shall we say. And that set the tone for me in some ways to try and figure out what was true and what wasn't true. Also, while I was in the Army, there's an area there's a column like a desert, the Arava, which goes down to Eilat in the Red Sea. And there were ruins of a people called the Nabataeans who used to grow food. They would grow fruit trees in the desert, putting rocks around the base of the tree to gather the dew in the morning. And there was also a whole group of people who had a civilization called Petra on the other side of the Jordan. So there was a great amount of mystery around the desert, around the people who used to live there, that absolutely fascinated me. And a lot of my early experience of some kind of mystery was developed in that time when I was living there. Another one of the things that was a very formative aspect for me was I was involved with an old Chinese guide. His name was Chung Fu, which apparently meant inner truth. And he was somebody that I met when I moved to London and was studying instrument making. He was a full trance channel. A man called Marshall Lever would go into full trance. And he would tell us stories of cycles and cataclysms, about these beings of light who would lead the people after a cataclysm when everything was in chaos. There would be groups of people who would be survivors, and how they would move from one place to another in order to reestablish some kind of presence on the planet. He talked much about crystals, and he talked much about the ancient worlds of Atlantis and Lemuria. He talked about health, and he was promoting multivitamin therapy, things that at the time were like totally, this was in the 70s, were totally unknown. He also talked very strongly about various kinds of disciplines, about silence, about being punctual, about doing affirmations. And he talked about, you know, the holy beings that watched over us, so that there was already a sense of not being alone in this world, that there were other guardians who watched over us. So he was very pivotal. And then soon after that, when I moved from California to New Mexico, I got involved with a teacher called Herman Rednick, who was a mystic, a painter. He followed the path of the Christ, and what he taught was the path of love and service. He had these masters that he communicated with. He had experiences of going into other realms and having mystical experiences. And he taught essentially the practice of visualizing the Christ and using that as a meditation, doing weekly lessons where we would write, after going to the class, we would write our own like summary of what was going on for us and read it out in the class. He had a very strong background in the Great White Brotherhood, the works of Alice Bailey and Rudolf Steiner. So he had a fairly extensive background in the esoteric Western traditions. And then while I was living in that area, I came upon this amazing thing called soul support systems. And my whole life began to shift. I went through a major tragedy in my life when my daughter was killed in a car accident. And I had a reading at least once a year, if not more. And flow and soul support systems were my anchor in many ways. Plus, I started recognizing more and more that the teachings of the ones with no names at the council were so much more, so aligned with everything that I was already exposed to. And as I started working recently more and more with the Essene material, I was realizing how much of the lineage that goes right back to the very beginnings was actually the same lineage when I was doing a Hartford session, where I was tuning into to what John Henry would say about traveling the dimensions, asking how can he help humanity. This was very much in line with everything that I had been learning from many of the other disciplines, many of the other secret practices, the mystery schools. And all Chinese was very much of a mystery school kind of person. Much of the things he taught, you know, the old sage would teach the young emperor in the forest how to walk on water, how to go through a waterfall into a cave where these beings with hoods would be talking to them without faces, teaching about the 33 energies. It was fascinating. And I started recognizing how far back the lineage goes. The connection, again, with soul support systems, with the time of Christ, with, I remember Union, you know, as somebody who was told that I had been Judas, I had a very personal connection. Much of my emotional evolution was based on dealing with certain aspects of challenge that I faced that were in some ways connected with my ancient connections, also with the Magdalene. And much of what is in the very beginning of I Remember Union is very much in alignment with much of what I'm going to share that I discovered in other mystery schools, in other teachings, in other books. Also, the exercises in sunlight on water. You know, I would go walking up the mountain almost every day, and in those days I had my little Walkman, and I would be listening to my readings, and they would give me great strength. There was a time also when I was really having a hard time, I would sit and watch the sunrise above the mountain, and I would be reading or going over, you know, like a mantra, I would say the Psalms, especially the two Psalms that resonated with me. The Lord is my shepherd, and I will lift up mine eyes unto the hills. Now these became a practice. And also when I was getting my readings, the ones with no names were talking about how the crickets were actually singing to me, how there was this connection with the world of nature. And I always loved to garden, I loved to hike, I was right there in the mountains. And I started to develop this vision of what community would look like. And there was a hunger in me for a real land-based community of people who lived as equals, who respected each other and respected nature, respected the animals, respected the creatures. So gardening and then my love for water and trees, it all, you know, started to weave together. And then one day I was good friends with Stuart Wilde, who was one of the people involved with the 33 energies, with the old Chinese guide. He invited me to come up to Denver to a workshop he was doing, and I was exposed to the crystal skull. It was probably one of the first times it had been on display. I was also exposed to, I did this little exercise with somebody in telepathy where I would actually feel the presence of somebody right there. It was almost like I was transported into a whole new vibration. But the thing that struck me the most was in the hall where I was displaying my instruments. There was this person who had a whole series of spiritual books. And one of the books caught my eye. It said, The Hebrew Pharaohs of Egypt. Now, for me, growing up as a little good Jewish boy, reading, you know, the Old Testament, this struck some kind of chord in me that stirred my curiosity tremendously. So I delved into the book. I read the book, and I was blown away because I had already been exposed to a man, a pharaoh, a king called Akhenaten, who was what was regarded as the first monotheist. He was somebody who proposed that the Aten, the sun disk, was a representation of one God. And this was at a time when Egypt was at the height of her power. There was a pharaoh called Thutmose III who conquered as far up as Sumeria, pretty much, all the way up north and all the way down to Nubia. And he established a tremendous empire that brought immense wealth to Egypt. Egypt was the power that pretty much ran the show in the Middle East during that time of the 18th dynasty, around 1300 BC. And so when I started to read about this book about the Hebrew pharaohs, what I started, and I'm gonna go into this a little later when I show you some slides and some of what I actually read in there. But I'm going to read you a list of some of the books that really sparked, you might call it the great mystery for me about our origins as the Hebrews, as spiritual traditions, as mystery schools. The Hebrew pharaohs of Egypt started me on my explorations, but there was a book called The Secrets of the Exodus. And The Secrets of the Exodus postulated that the actual Hebrew language was developed by this King Akhenaten in his new city that he created in the middle of the desert. And he was teaching the law of the one. He was teaching about the one God, about the equality. His wife was Nefertiti, and Nefertiti always appeared with him as an equal. There was depictions in the art of his period that was completely a turnaround to the way in which Egyptian art had been depicted for thousands of years. There's actually, I'll now show you slides of the king of Akhenaten and Nefertiti sitting opposite each other with their children on their laps, kissing them. The rays of the sun were shining down upon them, giving life to their nostrils. There was a whole brand new culture that was developed around him. And it's been postulated by very many people already that Akhenaten and Moses were possibly one. Even Sigmund Freud wrote a book, a monogram called Moses and Akhenaten. So this is a fascinating, absolutely fascinating study. There's a book called The Copper Scroll, which was one of the Dead Sea Scrolls that was written on copper. And this gentleman was a metallurgist. And what he claimed was that the copper on which this particular document was written originated in the time of Akhenaten in the 18th dynasty. It's also a list of treasure. It's like a whole treasure map of phenomenal amounts of gold and silver and treasures that were experienced, that other people had postulated were the treasure of the temple in Jerusalem that was hidden before the Romans, destroyed the temple. But actually this man who wrote the book called The Copper Scroll pretty convincingly postulates that it was actually the temple that Akhenaten built in the deserts of Egypt that was the source of where these treasures arose and where they were buried. Many of them were buried in places that were identified by landmarks that were found when they finally excavated that area. I know I'm trying to rush through this part. The Lost Teachings of Atlantis showed up next. And this book was by a man who was about to commit suicide when a television screen started crackling and this person started appearing and telling him all the answers to the questions that nobody else would give him, where he was so despondent that he was ready to commit suicide. And this, essentially, this voice came in there and started teaching him. And he realized that somehow he needed to get to a monastery somewhere in the middle of the Himalayas. And this was what he was told to do, and this is what he finally did. He came to a monastery in the middle of Tibet, kind of a Shambhala. It was hidden. You could only get there by invitation and through major adventure. And he was actually welcomed there, and he went through quite an initiation process. But he was told before he reached enlightenment, and he was told that he needed to leave the monastery and he needed to tell his story. And the story that he told in this book, you'll see the cover again. It's essentially the Lost Teachings of Atlantis. Essentially, he was told that he needs to tell the story, and within a very short time of leaving the monastery, the Chinese attacked, and many of the monks, many of the people that had been living there for thousands of years, actually, was originally founded by the ones of light who came from Atlantis. The monastery was attacked and destroyed, and many of the inhabitants were killed. And so it was not by chance that he was told to write this book. Soon after that, as I was exploring, I found this book called, where is it? Basically, a couple, Prentice and Wilson, and then Dolores Cannon, were doing regressions on people who had lived in the time of the Essenes, who had lived in Atlantis, who had lived in Lemuria, and I was literally gobbling up books that were telling me about what it was like living in those times, what it was like to actually be in the presence of the Christ as he was doing his ministry. Many of these were people who lived with him and worked with him. And there's a whole series of books that I read that expanded my whole vision of that period, but also of what now appeared to me to be the origins of how the Essenes came about. What was it that caused somebody or some group to establish them in the first place? And what was the purpose of this? And it became clear too, because of the discoveries of the Dead Sea Scrolls, that the Essenes had a very strong mission, that they were knowing that they were meant to be the cradle in which the Christ and the Magdalene and the Mary, the mother, would actually grow to establish their ministry in Israel, and how important the teachings and the training and the life of community, the life of equality, and the connection with nature and with the universe was going to be. I'm looking at the time and I'm getting nervous. So I gobbled up books on Atlantis, on Lemuria, my experience of visiting stone circles, places like Glastonbury, Avebury, reading books by Edgar Cayce and Edmund Seckeley, who was a man who wrote much about the Essenes. He actually translated books called the Gospel of Peace by the Gospel of the Essenes, the Essene Gospel of Peace. He found a copy in the Vatican, and there was another copy in the library of the Habsburgs, which he translated. And from that, he actually got a very interesting view, a picture of how the Essenes actually lived, how they were connected so deeply with the world of nature, with what they called the angels, and with the experience of living in harmony with nature, of growing food, of imbibing the energy, the vibrations of living substance, and how they developed a huge, tremendous amount of a very high energy consciousness. The Essenes and the ones before them that taught them were very much involved also with a connection with extraterrestrials, with technologies from Atlantis that were part of the life in Qumran. And then it also led me to this recognition that many of the new children, and that many of us, that many of those of you who are on, in fact, I would probably hazard a guess that everybody who is on this Zoom call has been at one time or another, has been involved with the Essenes, has been part of some kind of community of monasteries, of secret traditions, and of mystery schools. And that we have been drawn to come back at this time to help establish the new order of life on earth, the heaven on earth, the new world, and that many of the young people, many of the millennials, those in their 20s and 30s, and then even the younger ones, are coming in now, some of them for the very first time. Many of them come from different star systems, and they all are coming here knowing that they have this mission to help to establish light and to help to re-establish heaven on earth, to re-establish a golden age of peace, an age of cooperation, of equality, of reconnection with Earth Mother, of honoring of all life, of honoring of the equality of all the creatures, of all that is, and recognizing the interconnectedness that goes into the minuscule down to atomic and cellular and DNA levels, but also go out into the cosmos, how everything is interconnected. And you can't take anything away, because then the whole order would not be in place. So let's take a moment to just all connect now in the heart. It's been a lot of words, a lot of information, and I haven't even scratched the surface yet. But let's take a moment to just put our right hand on our heart, our left hand on our right. Take a nice deep breath and connect with Mother Earth beneath us. Connect with Father Sky above us. Connect with the breath. And feel that connection across the airwaves, one with the other, so that we're all feeling again this ancient connection that we have to the very beginning of time, to that time when we knew, when we felt a calling to come to this planet, when we felt a need to help to remind others that we are light, that we have always been light, and that the experience of coming into duality can make us forget what it means to remember our destiny and our origin as light and as one. as belonging to that field of oneness that encompasses everything that is. Of all being children of the one Creator, all being equal in the eyes of God, and all being expressions of that livingness that is what we call Creator. And I want us to begin to feel now our roots from our feet connected to Mother Earth, our roots going deep into Mother Earth. And as we feel that nurturing of the Great Mother, and as we feel our connection with her, we begin to feel that there are these four strong root systems that are beginning to rise up and weave up the beginnings of what we would call the trunk of a tree. Four streams, the stream of truth, the stream of light, the stream of order and union, all spiraling together into this trunk that connects heaven, that connects the earth, the roots, and brings us up to the crown, where again we are connected, just like the root systems of all life are connected through the earth. Our crowns are connected to the atmosphere, to the molecules of air and water, to the pheromones that are given off as fragrance, as molecules and atoms that feed everyone as we are fed, as we receive the nurturing of the sun, of the air and the water, as we connect to the whole of life in the cosmos, and to Creator and to all of the angels of light. So we begin to weave these four streams, and they begin to spiral in a clockwise manner as we send out this vibration, this clockwise spiral of this column of light, this Christ consciousness that connects the vertical alignment of heaven and earth with the heart in the center, with all of life, that reminds all that is of that which lies beyond dualism, of the union of all that is. And so I invite you back as we look at who the Essenes were, how we know of them, and what was their chief role, and why they're so important today. They spoke of a teacher of righteousness. The word Essene actually means expectancy. According to Edgar Cayce, they were the ones who were expecting the chosen one to come. They spoke of the battle between light and dark. They spoke of how the original angels came down into this planet and decided to see what it would feel and be like to inhabit density, to experience feeling, to experience the senses. And the first wave of these became trapped. And so it was that the second wave of these beings of light, of these angels, that each of you are represented by. Each of you was a spark that came down with the first being who led this second group to help to remind those who were trapped of their origin as angels, as light, as aspects of the holy beings of light, as sparks of divine fire. And this one was known to the Egyptians as Thoth. He was known to the Zoroastrians as Zoroaster. He was known as Joseph. He was known in many guises. And he was the one that we now call the Christ or Jesus or Yeshua. He was the one who led us all back to the earth to remind those who had forgotten that we are of the light, and that the descent into darkness, into density, and the forgetfulness is coming to an end now, because we ourselves have had to remember over the many lifetimes that we have been here on this planet. We have had to go through the whole experience of reminding ourselves, of awakening our consciousness to the reality that we are of the light, and that we now are embodying that and teaching that through the way in which we live our lives. And this was what the Essenes were and what they did. They practiced living oneness. They practiced equality. The men and the women were equals. Many of the teachers, the one who taught the Christ from an early age till about 16, was a woman called Judith, who was an Essene leader, very advanced in consciousness, who could bilocate. She taught Jesus on Mount Carmel, one of the communities of the Essenes. They have written, the Essenes have written much about the battle between the light and the dark, those that they call the sons of the light, who were always pitted against the sons of the lie, or Belial. The Hopi talked of the four worlds, of their origins as Lemurians who had migrated, and how every time those that remembered the light, those that remembered to honor Creator, were faced by those who had forgotten and who were became enmeshed in the density and in selfishness and greed and in the need and desire for power over, for control. And so the world ended, according to the Hopi, three times it was destroyed. And those who carried the light, those who were connected to the Kachinas, the ones who came from the stars, who communicated and guided them, so they survived from the one world into the other. The first was destroyed by fire, the second by ice, the third by water. And now we are living the fourth world on the brink of moving towards the fifth. And whether this will be through a devastation or through an ascension will be up to us and up to those who carry the light, being able to remind more and more and more of those who are living in the consciousness now of their role of remembering, the light. Oh, it's 5:44. We're good. Sorry, I was getting a little nervous trying to pack it earlier. So, the fallen angels, those who had originally come and became trapped in density, were followed by the second wave, the ones who came together with the Christ, remembering their origins, and coming here knowing that this was the time. This was the time that had been prophesied, just as for the Essenes. The time had been prophesied that the one who was going to bring the light be the one who would establish this vibration of the new earth, the higher vibration who would establish the connection, the reminder of our connection with the Holy Father, with what they called the because they were so steeped in the traditions of Judaism, they used the terminology of the time. And they talked about the Father, but they also talked about the Mother with, in relation to Mother Earth. And so they were here, the second wave, which we belong to. They have come here to remind those who are trapped in density that there is another reality. Old Chinese talked about the soul, about being immortal, eternal, infinite, and universal. This was part of his teaching. Again, there's the four elements, the four realities. There's the understanding of the one, excuse me one second. Sorry, I lost my train. The ones who, they were essentially, the Essenes understood that part of their mission was in fact to create an energetic structure in which the Messiah would come, in which the one, and I must admit that I have been much of a skeptic for much of my life, but as I've been reading these regression stories, and I've actually been feeling what it was like for those who experienced or re-experienced life in the time of Jesus, life in the times of Atlantis and Lemuria, I began to realize that things that I would not allow myself to accept, like the Immaculate Conception, that these things were actually possible, and that in fact there's enough literature, there's enough record from other civilizations that these things happened. And so the Essenes had communities, especially the one on Mount Carmel, which was known originally as the School of the Prophets. Samuel apparently had established the School of the Prophets there. There's a lineage that goes back to the world of Melchizedek, the order of Melchizedek that was written in the Bible as one who gave teachings and assisted Abraham. And Abraham apparently gave tithes to him. The Melchizedek order was also very much connected with Persia, with the Magi, with the understanding of astrology, of the connection between the earth and the intergalactic understandings and realities. They were very versed in the wisdom of the stars, in the reading of the planets, of the alignments. They taught this to the Essenes. They taught this through the mystery schools to those who ended up in the monasteries in Tibet. They were very much involved with coming back and forth to the Essene community and temple on Mount Carmel to oversee the education and the progress of the Yeshua in his time when he was going through his teachings. I know I'm going to be jumping all over the place. Joseph of Arimathea was very much involved with the Essenes, but he was also one of the Sanhedrin. He was one of the leaders of the Jewish people at the time. He was a merchant who had fleets of ships that would go back and forth to Britain, to Ireland. He had very strong connections with the Gaelic people, with the Druids, with their teachings. They all knew each other. And he was the one who would take the young Jesus to study with the Druids, to study with the Magi, to study with the masters in places like India. He would take him back and forth to Mount Carmel, where he studied with this one, Judith. Because he was a tin merchant, he had the monopoly of tin production and distribution of the whole of the Roman Empire of the time. The Romans depended upon him for tin in order to make their weapons. Tin was a component of either bronze or iron at the time. And he had very good connections to many of the ancient people. He had connections to the Roman Empire and was regarded very highly. And it was such that he was actually able to ask for permission to take the body of the Christ down from the cross after the crucifixion and bring it to the tomb that he had prepared for the resurrection and for the healing of the Christ, which was part of the ministry of those who were brought up in the Essene tradition, who were trained in various levels of consciousness to hold space. In the book by the regression book around the Mary Magdalene, it was revealed that there were circles of women who were initiates, who were trained to hold space so that the energy of the crucifixion would actually be protected as much as possible by those who were holding space, who were able to energetically see and know what was going on and project healing energy and light energy and power to help this transition, which was a very strong and very difficult time for Jesus in his ministry to go through the whole of that experience. There were circles within circles of the men, and there were circles within circles of the women that were led by Mary Magdalene and by the mother, the Holy Mother Mary. Mary was chosen amongst 12 women who were dedicated at very young ages to be in the temples of the Essenes, to live very devoted lives, very much involved in practice. There was a very strong lineage connected with the temples of Isis and the whole of the priesthood, the priestesses of Isis in Egypt. Egypt had a colony at a community of Essenes in Alexandria. There was a community of Essenes in Syria. There was a community. Actually, all of the early communities that became the first churches of the Christian era were essentially Essene communities that practiced the teachings that were what we were sharing and will share more of, the teachings of equality, the teaching of honor. Mostly the Essenes did not practice sacrifice. They did not eat meat. There were those that did. It was not something that was imposed upon people. But essentially, they gave offerings of the products of nature, of the trees, the fruit of the trees, the harvest of the fields. They lived very much in tune with the earth. When we did our little meditation, the Essenes actually had a tree of life that was based on the number 7, 7 roots and 7 branches. These were all aligned with the 7 days, each of which had an angel. They were aligned with the angels of the sun, of the moon, of the earth. They very much were involved with a belief in the angelic forces, which were also represented by the forces of nature and the what you might call the nature kingdom. Let me go back a bit here. I was talking about the meaning of the Essenes. I know this is going to be a little bit all over the place, so please forgive me. But I also want to go back now to some of the origins of the time of Akhenaten that we mentioned earlier. When I started investigating who was Moses, who were the early Israelites, what was it that was the fire beneath these people? What was the teaching of oneness that Akhenaten taught? And how the heck did it end up in Egypt when the thousands of years of civilization that was developed in Egypt was so different? It was so two-dimensional. The art of ancient Egypt was extremely two-dimensional. There was no softness. There was no life force in it. It was very, very stone-like, very much like the sculptures, very much like the stelae, the stone columns that were inscribed. The figures were all facing one way. They did not have any life force to them. And so this one Akhenaten actually encouraged a whole new vibration. He banished the many gods of the early ones, the Amun, as the head of all the gods. He established the one god, the Aten, which was represented by the sun disk. It was not actually a worship of the sun, but one of the common threads was that they would worship the rising of the sun. They would all gather to greet the sun. The temple that Akhenaten built did not have a roof. It was open to the sky. It was open to the sun. Akhenaten was one of the pharaohs, one of the kings, who actually inherited a lineage that came into Egypt at a time probably about three generations before him. There's a book, let me see. I think it's time for me to take you to a little bit of a slideshow as I talk, because I have images that I'd like you to see. And I'm going to share the screen with you now. Let's see, I'm going to move this to the side. And I'm going to start a slideshow. You can all hear me?
Yeah, it looks good, Raphael.
Can you see what's on the screen now?
Yep.
All right, so let's start with slide number one and give thanks for Soul Support Systems. For she would, thank you, Flo. We would not be here doing this if it were not for this incredible lineage that goes back to the same beginnings we've been talking about, teaching the same teachings of oneness, of light, of truth, and of order. The legacy of the Essenes is this legacy, and it weaves together the very beginnings with the young ones who are coming now, who are establishing the new world. So we're going to play the slideshow, and I'll talk over it and with it as we move into the next one. Let's see. So this is the book that was written by a man called Peniel, who was the one I told you about, who discovered this monastery in the middle of the Himalayas and actually underwent a training, a many years of initiation, and actually became enlightened and was told that it was up to him to teach the ancient teachings. And it was in his book that I found out about the second wave that was led by Thoth, by the one who was also known as the bringer of the mysteries, the one who taught language, who taught the writing, the hieroglyphs, who established, in fact, the pyramids in Egypt. In the days when Atlantis was getting ready, it had a number of times when Atlantis actually was facing disaster. The continent of Atlantis broke up three times before the final destruction. And in the meantime, those who held the light understood what was coming. They were very much involved in prophecy and in knowing the mysteries, and they established colonies of light. They established places that would be able to survive and to continue teaching the truth, the order, the union, and the light, and teach the initiations of consciousness, the understanding of reincarnation, of karma, the understandings of the importance of selfless service, that which Hermann Rednick called the path of love and service, the path of the Christ, you might call it, is another word for it. They taught of the consciousness technologies, in addition to some of the actual technologies of crystals, of time travel, of bilocation, many of the teachings that were highly advanced that could actually move very huge stone through vibration, through sound, through access to technologies of spacecraft, of time travel, and space travel, of communication with the galactic friends who were also watching over us, of the times in which the DNA of humans was actually manipulated. There were so many threads that weave together into this connection with the ancient ones. And this is Lemuria, I mean, this is Atlantis. So it was within this teaching of oneness that this one Peniel reminds us how important the connection with these ancient ones that were also called the Kalu, those who traveled to these colonies that they established in order to establish communities of light that would share these teachings, that are parallels to the teachings of soul support systems. I was incredibly amazed and blessed when I discovered this book. Oswald White Bear was a Hopi elder who was trained by his parents and taught the oral tradition of his people. He is the one who taught Frank Waters everything that's in the Book of the Hopi. He taught him of all the ceremonies, and he taught of how the Hopi originally were the first people on the planet who grew up, who developed the communities, the ways of life, on Lemuria, the connection with nature, and how over time, the golden age, the way of living with nature in harmony, in community, in cooperation, how every time, many times it was after thousands and thousands of years, how the desire for selfish aggrandizement of the ego, the desire for power, the desire for control, would begin to undermine the ways of life of the people, and more would be won over by this sense of selfishness, of the need to satisfy and glorify the ego. And so he teaches too that there were many migrations from Lemuria, because Lemuria also went under. He actually talks of a woman who was the leader of Atlantis, who was corrupted by power, who won over many of the children of the light into the fold, shall we say, of this, what we call the sons of Belial, of the lie, those who worshipped and who used the, you might call it magic, in a negative way. They used technologies to use them for, instead of for the good of the whole, they used them for power, and they developed terrible weapons, and that this queen actually attacked Lemuria, and some of the people who were told where to go were actually able to shield themselves from these terrible magnetic, electromagnetic weapons that were leveling the cities of Lemuria. Both Atlantis and Lemuria had sent colonies, so that the Lemurians established colonies westward through Asia, through the islands, through Tibet, Burma, and all the way actually across towards Ireland, to the shores of Ireland and Europe. While Atlantis established colonies to the east before it went under. And so many of the traditions of the memories of a people that were very powerful, that were very advanced technologically, but also spiritually, many of these teachings, some say that the ones came from the east, some say they came from the west. The advanced civilizations of South America were all, according to White Bear, they were all established by these waves of migrations of the Hopi, moving from Lemuria and establishing colonies. They also talk of establishing a community beside Lake Titicaca, again, that was destroyed. In some of the books on the destructions, they actually talk about a time before the mountains rose up, and how certain archaeological discoveries had actually shown that there were civilizations prior to the raising of the mountains, and that actually Lake Titicaca was at ground at sea level at one time, and that there were these waves of destructions that destroyed much of the memory of the spiritual awareness that these people had developed. Highly recommended book. It's very expensive to buy, but you can get it online. It's fascinating reading, and it eventually ends up with the Hopi finding their land in Hopi, New Mexico and Arizona, and how the Kachinas were actually representatives from the stars who taught them and guided them, and who are now represented in their dance and taught them many of their ceremonies and many of the practices to reconnect with nature, to help to bring the rain, and to remind them of their origins and of the teachings of oneness. And again, there's a very strong reflection of this battle between the dark and the light that the Essenes held very strongly, and that is part of their writings, because one of the things that the Essenes were very strong about was that they collected manuscripts from all around the world, from many traditions, and they copied them, and they distributed them around their communities. In the beginning of I Remember Union, everything that's written about the swing between worlds, about the mission of Jesus, of Mary, and of Judas, going over their agreements, their connection with their missions and their previous lifetimes, and knowing what would come, is all again a very strong parallel to much of the material that I've been sharing with you already. And it's very, I highly recommend, if you haven't read it in a while, that you go back and especially read those parts that remind us of what it was like in the swing between worlds, where we actually knew the whole story, not just of our own incarnations and our own missions, but of the whole field of union. This is one of the first books I read with the regressions of those that actually lived among the Essenes, that remembered their times with Jesus, that devoted their lives to the healing, to the study of the herbs, to working with those that were less fortunate, those that were plagued with leprosy, those that followed Jesus in his teachings, in his ministry of healing. Healing was a very powerful energy among the Essenes. They were very studied in many of the ancient healing techniques that came from Egypt and from Atlantis and Lemuria. And they used this energy healing, they used the laying on of hands, they used the light, they used what they were taught to work with the lepers and with the poor and with the outcasts. And of course they lived in equality, so that many of those that went with Jesus were actually women that were highly regarded as teachers as well. And there was no distinction, there was no slavery, there was common ownership of everything. When you joined the Essenes, you had a 3-year initiation period in which you were in probation. You had to hand over all of your property, all of your, you only had the clothes, very simple items that you kept that were your own. They wore special garb, wearing white clothes, unless they were going out into the rest of the world. They needed to blend with the people. They were very often under attack. They were highly regarded by many of those who wrote the histories and who shared with us some of what was known of these scenes before the discoveries of the scrolls. But very often those who would travel to search for manuscripts would actually take money from their common fund in order that they would have money for food and places to stay, but they would also stay in other Essene communities, and they would go to gather documents and bring them back to Qumran, where one of the main places where they would copy these manuscripts, which were later found in the scrolls. This is a book about, this is the one book that originally, it's by the same author. It's actually a different title, a later book, but it's connected to what alerted me to the connection between Akhenaten and Moses and the beginnings of the Israelites, the beginnings of the Old Testament, and the five books of Moses and the actual secret of who Moses was, and the connection with this man. Ahmed Osman, who wrote that book, was the first to identify a mummy that's in, it's either in Egypt or Berlin, I can't remember now, but this man was buried in the Valley of the Kings He's one of perhaps the only mummy that was not of the royal lineage. Ahmed Osman believes that this man was actually Joseph, and that it was he who brought this teaching of the one God and of the Atom into the iconography, into the teachings and the cosmology of the Egyptians. He was known as he's known as Yuya, which is a strange name for an Egyptian. It has the word Ya in it, which is actually the Hebrew connection with the word God. The letters of the Yud twice, which actually is part of many of the Hebrew names. So this man was known as Yuya, and he had a daughter called Tia. And he actually was called, I'm going to read you this, he was the vizier, he was known as the master of the horse, he was the deputy of the king in the chariotry, he was the vizier for two pharaohs, Thutmose IV and Amenhotep III. And these were the ancestors of Akhenaten, and they were he was actually the great-grandfather, I believe, of the one who became Akhenaten. And his daughter was taken by the king. It must have been... Amenhotep III. The father of... Akhenaten, actually, he chose this man's daughter to be his wife, and he treated her with equality. This is a book, I'm going to take you back. This is the one who became the queen, who was the daughter of this man called Yuya, who we believe was Joseph. This is at the bottom, is a statue of the woman who became Tia. Very un-Egyptian looking, very Nubian looking actually, and the headdress is also very much associated with Nubia, with the south, with the blacker people. But the mummy at the top picture is a depiction of this woman who actually was the queen of Egypt. This book, The Secrets of the Exodus, is another fascinating find. It was actually written by two brothers who were Talmudic scholars, and they show how the Hebrew of the period of Akhenaten actually was an amalgam of the hieratic language, the hieroglyphics, that we used at the time of Akhenaten. And in the book, he shows how almost all of the names can be related to these Hebrew and hieroglyphic words and names and letters. He also shows how much of the practice of the Jews, of how they put on the phylacteries, there's this thing that you do in the morning when you pray, how many of the traditions of the Jewish people came from this period of Akhenaten. I recently was at the British Museum looking at some of these things, and I was fascinated to find this thing that the pharaoh wore underneath of the crown that was a very almost identical representation of the way in which you bound your phylacteries around your head when you were doing your morning prayers. So this was a depiction of Akhenaten on the left and Nefertiti on the right, shown as equals, shown in very three-dimensional ways, with the young daughters sitting on their lap, very much of a domestic scene. Akhenaten is actually kissing one of his daughters. The rays of the sun with the Ankh, it's hard to see it, but where the ray ends at the nostrils of the king and queen, there's an Ankh, which is the sign of life. These are depictions that were very unique to this period. Also, the long neck and the very high skull was very much of this period. And it's my belief that much of this, this is Nefertiti, you can see the long neck and the high crown is also, let's see if I can move it. No, I don't think I can. It's possible that the original DNA of Akhenaten and this lineage actually came from the stars. And I believe that there's evidence to that effect, that those who had these very high, skulls, were actually representing people that came with a very high advanced intelligence and level of consciousness. So how did we find out about the Essenes other than through these ancient writings of Josephus and Pliny? The Dead Sea Scrolls were scrolls that were discovered in 1948, just a little bit after I was born. Shepherds were playing around, and one guy threw a stone into a cave, and he heard a sound of a breaking of pottery. And he climbed in the next day and discovered these scrolls. The one on the left here is the copper scroll that I mentioned before. You can see on the bottom left the cave in which these scrolls were discovered. On the right-hand side is some of the writing and some of what's still intact when the scrolls were unrolled. This is a picture of some of the scrolls in the dirt that's in some of the books of the man that I told you about, Edward Seckley, who translated some of the material of the Essenes. This is his book in which he talks about the seven angels, the 7 days of the week, the different practices that the Essenes engaged in, where they would actually use the living energies of plants to enhance their own lifestyles. This one, yeah, I'm going to read this to you, the second one especially, because it's a very powerful connection. This was found in the Dead Sea Scrolls, in one of the scrolls called the Thanksgiving Psalms. I will praise thy works with songs of thanksgiving continually from period to period, in the circuits of the day and in its fixed order, with the coming of light from its source, and at the turn of evening, and the outgoing of light, at the outgoing of darkness, and the coming in of day, continuing in all the generations of time. And this is a prayer to the Aten, written by the Pharaoh Akhenaten. It was found in the tomb with Tutankhamun, and it is believed to have been written by Akhenaten, the Pharaoh who introduced the one God. And actually, I was trying to get hold of one of Herman Rednick's students who wrote a beautiful song using the lyrics. I breathe the sweet breath which comes forth from thy mouth. I shall behold thy beauty every day. It is my desire that I may hear thy sweet voice. even in the north wind, that my limbs may be quickened with life through love of thee. Give me thy hands holding forth thy spirit, that I may receive it and may live by it. Call thou upon my name throughout eternity, and it shall never fail. You can see how similar this is to the hymn of the Essenes. It's so clear to me how deeply is this connection, especially when we agree that the scrolls, the copper scroll that was written on copper, that dates to the time of Akhenaten, and where the treasures relate to the actual temple of Akhenaten and not the one in Jerusalem. It feels like there's such a powerful connection. Here is the tree of life of the Essenes. As you can see, there are seven roots and seven branches. Each one is connected to a particular time of day, to a particular aspect or angel, to a particular aspect of nature. And each day, part of their practice was to communicate with the angel of this time. They kept the Sabbath. They did special prayers, special practice. Excuse me. And they honored every evening. They would write a summary of their day. They would wake up early in the morning to greet the sun, and they would watch the sun go down in the evening. They would be very much attuned to growing things, to planting of trees, to arboriculture, talking with the plants like we're familiar with from Scotland, Findhorn, where they communicated with the spirits of nature, with the devas. So much of a similarity with community, living in peace, in harmony, and in cooperation. So this is from this book by Sekeli, who translated the Essene Gospel of Peace. Looks like that's it for the slides. I guess my information is here too, so we can exit this share. I'm getting the message that it's time. I'm going to close this. All right, minimize it. All right, you can still see me? You overloaded?
You look good. We can hear you. We can see you.
Are you overloaded yet? I mean, I could go on for hours.
We're full.
I'm full. My cup runneth over. I do want to get to some of the special energies that the Essenes represent for us and to what we can learn from it. But I'm getting a nudge that it's time to do a little mini channeling. So I'm going to take a nice deep little... sip of water. So I invite you to go back into that space of the heart. You can go there by putting your right hand on your heart, your left on your right, and tuning back into that essence in the very center, that sun at the very center of our essence that connects us to Mother Earth, connects us to Father Sky, connects us through the threads of our hearts to each other, and by extension to all of life, connects us to all that is, and to the beauty of living on this planet, this Garden of Eden with Mother Earth, connecting to the beauty of the stars above us, of the galaxies, of the endlessness of space and time, of infinity, our true home as eternal beings, as immortal beings. And you can rest your hands if you like. It is not by chance that we have gathered here together, that we are exploring this subject of these beings who decided to live apart from life in the fast lane, who decided that they wished to live a life of harmony, a life of balance, that they wished to find a way to experience the end of karma, to experience the beauty of oneness manifested in this time and place on this Mother Earth, this Garden of Eden, experiencing the great gift of the Creator, which we have called the free will experiment, where each one has been given the seed of life within and the ability to be a creator like the one, like that which is called God or Goddess or the great mystery. That this gift of choice, this gift of living in separation and choosing to return to union, to return to the knowing that we are all one, that we are all children of the one that created everything that is, that everything that is this one, and that it is not separate. It is not possible to distinguish. It is not possible to separate in reality. But that it was in some ways part of this experiment to experience what it was like to not be aware of union, to be aware of the ebb and flow of that which is called polarity, of light and dark, of good and bad, of in and out, of yes and no, of understanding that in order for movement, in order for emotion, in order for something unique to come into being, it was necessary for the oneness to separate itself into two polarities, so that the electromagnetic fields could flow, so that there could be movement, so that consciousness itself could inhabit the material plane and evolve towards a return to union. You have been part of an experiment, of an understanding, of an evolution that has been ongoing for millennia upon millennia through civilizations that have come and gone on this planet and on many planets for eons upon eons and millions upon millions of years and of light years. Within this eternity, there is also an awareness of what you might call the moment, of living a reality as a separate entity with a separate consciousness, with an ability to choose, an ability to make choices, and an ability to experience what it is like to be within the density without being caught, without being lost, without being trapped. And it is the time on your planet now that has been suffering from so much destruction, so much greed, so much cruelty, so much corruption, devastation, and imbalance, so much suffering, that the cycles upon cycles are reaching a place that is different from all other time frames, in which it is part of the evolution of planet Earth, of Mother Gaia, that she will evolve into a whole new dimension that is beyond the reach of this separative consciousness, and that establishes a new framework of existence for human beings to be able to dwell in a dimension of love, in a dimension without suffering, a dimension of harmony, of cooperation, of beauty, and of complete respect for all life, so that the children may grow up with the memory of war, not even within their consciousness, that they may grow up to know their connection to their star brothers and sisters, their connection to their past as light, as love, as expressions of God's love manifest in the world of human, in the world of animal, in the world of mineral, in the world of nature, and that there may finally be an end to suffering and an evolution in consciousness that is what has been termed the peace of a million years of dreaming. And it is this coming together of the ages, this experience of having been a spark that came, that was trapped, and another spark that came to free those, to live a life of unconditional love, of no judgment, to offer service, to offer your living a life as a model of union, so that others will be affected and will learn for themselves that that choice is available and is a wise one. And so it is your role in this time now to become models for the young ones, to show them how they might create a world of equality, a world of balance, a world of beauty and harmony and cooperation. And it is your job to be the bridges. It is your job to give them the urgings and the teachings and the support that they need to be in this world so that they can operate, because they come from a whole new vibration that is not familiar with density to the same level, and that has a very hard time functioning and being here. And they need you as much as you need them. And so when we return to the talking about the practices of the Essenes, we want to encourage you to make sure that you do connect with Mother Earth in the way of the speaking of the Great Mother each month, that you connect with her down to the very core, to the elements of mineral, that you understand that your role in this evolution is to be the light, to hold the light, to shine and to stop judging yourselves, to live discipline, to be in honoring of your word, to not make promises that you do not carry forth, to not live in equality with others by judging them, because all are children of the one. That you encourage the young ones to recognize that old voices and imprints, as you teach in your heart through, are not valid, that there is a higher understanding of who you are and what you should pay attention to. That your purpose here is to love, is to live love, is to be love, is to not live in judgments of anyone, but to live fully in the present moment, honoring your temple, your body, putting healthy food in it, living a lifestyle like the Essenes of growing your own food, of not killing animals in order to sustain yourselves, but allowing them to flourish and blossom instead of suffering. To live in harmony with the earth, to rise with the sun, to greet her when she leaves, to honor the water, to bless the water, to work towards the end of polluting your great mother. And we will return now to the speaking of the Essenes and their practices and how you might embody this in your own daily life. Thank you for listening. So what is the legacy of the Essenes? The legacy was carried through into many of the secret teachings, the Templars, the Cathars, those that were persecuted by those who dominated, those who lived lives of control, those who twisted the truth in order to gain their own selfish ends. In every period, the Renaissance, there were those who carried a very special light and brought it to the people. And each time the light flourished for a while and then it dimmed, and it had to go back into hiding, into the mystery schools. It was the initiation into these teachings that formed the mystery schools that ended up becoming the Rosicrucians and the Knights Templars and the ones who went into the mountains of Tibet to carry on and teach the light, teach the teachings of oneness, teach the teachings that were passed down through the school of the prophets and brought to the Essenes. The use of numerology, the use of symbols in some of the special places like Rosslyn Chapel, where there is a whole cosmology that is carved into stone. These secret teachings were always available in some manner. But what has happened now with the internet? What is happening today with access to knowledge, with the ability to share across the world, with the ability of the young ones now, those who came from war, who knew and understood those, let's say, from Cambodia, who experienced the terrible tragedies. Their children are now having children. They are living a life that is much more cosmopolitan. It is much more of a mixed culture that is being experienced. It is becoming what this one here calls the rainbow spider weave, where the young ones are comfortable with those that are of a different culture, of a different skin color, where those are of a different way of seeing the world. They're coming together in festivals, in a new form of art. They're coming together in their expression of music, in how they live and how they wish to be on the land again, how they wish to live in communities, how they are hungry for ceremony. Many of these that I've experienced when I've been to these conscious festivals and given them heartthrob, and they're so hungry to know. They're so hungry for the practices of the shamans. They're going across to Peru to study with shamans, to learn the ways of the mysteries, the ways of connection with nature. They are hungry to live in community. They are hungry to live on the earth and to have equal with their children, to give them an upbringing that honors who they are as beings of light, as consciousness beings. It is these young ones that are coming now. It is our role as elders. Not all of you on this call are elders, but some of you are fortunately among the millennials yourselves and are understanding that there's a need for the elders and the young ones to share, to come together in circles, to understand what it's like to be on this planet, to have to be able to pay your rent, to find a meaningful employment, to find a way of expressing your unique creativity in the world. The Essenes used star maps. When somebody was born, they would cast a horoscope and they would see what was going to be the best use of this person's talents and what would be their gift. Would it be best for them to work in nature, to work in the gardens? Would it be best for them to become scholars, to go to the priesthood? Would it be best for them to actually develop their consciousnesses so that they would eventually be able to study the astrology, to study the reincarnation cycles, to study the meanings of the symbols, to study the language of the Hebrew, that also with the gematria had a secret teaching within the more accessible levels. Many of them were also taught to develop their psychic skills so that they would be able to communicate with others at long distances, to use telepathy, that they would also be able to teach the young ones how to grow in consciousness. So the Essenes were very much holders of the light of the wisdom teachings. And they also taught and they also embodied it as they learned to live in silence. They would wake up early in the morning. They would go in silence to have a meal, a communal meal. They would don their white clothing. They would bathe numerous times during the day in cold water. They honored the waters. They had special ways of bringing water to the desert. They practiced equality, as we said before. Women and men were equal. There were no such things as slaves or servants in a time in which slavery was rife. Their communication with nature was something that it's very powerful. It's a powerful practice that I believe is probably the most compelling thing that we in our daily lives could embody. To go into nature as often as possible, to ground, to hug a tree, to sit beside a tree and meditate and connect with Mother Earth and Father Sky through the tree, to talk to the tree, to connect with the angels that watch over us, to connect with each one of us, with our own guides, with our own intuition, with our own ability to tune in to the guidance that's available to us, and then to silence the mind and listen for the answers, to develop our ability to see when somebody is in need of an extra hand, or perhaps just a smile or a kind word. These are the kinds of things that are part of living a life of of service, of being able to volunteer your time in a benevolent way, of initiating projects like planting trees, like teaching children how to recycle, whatever it is that is your passion. I believe that we're being asked to live a life in which we honor people in a much more cooperative way now, to honor how we bring up our children, so that we honor a way of being that is a much more peaceful way, so that we know how to take a nice deep breath when we're under stress, and remember that that's something we can tell our children. When they start going off the deep end, we can remind ourselves to go into that moment where there's nothing but the breath, and that we can remind our children, take time out, take a breath. This too shall pass. The moment is all there really is. This is how we live in eternity, living in the moment, living in our bodies, fully embodying who we are as a spirit energy that is inhabiting a body, as a body that is connected to an energy of spirit, of consciousness, that we have choice, that everything that lays before us is a choice, and that it is our God-given gift to use this choice wisely, to find a way to honor our heart's desires, to honor the way in which we have lived with this longing inside of us, and to find a way to manifest it, find a way to come together with others, to work together, to get together in circles, to support the women in their understanding that the world is waiting for them to take on leadership roles, to create new models of what it's like to be a man in this world, as a support system for nature, as a steward of the land, as a steward of the balance now between the masculine and the feminine, of whatever we do, always finding a place of balance. And it's my understanding that the Essenes embodied these principles. Because of the times, they had to adjust how they lived. It's not been long that I've decided to become a vegetarian. You know, I went traveling to England for 2 weeks, so I decided I could also be flexible, and that being rigid does not work in a world where one needs to be flexible. But I've actually come to understand that it was not too hard to create that shift, to learn to live eating raw food more and more, living to work with grains and with sprouting. And secondly, in his book, the one about biogenics, talks about how you can actually imbibe the livingness of growing wheat. And every week you start a new cycle of growing wheatgrass, and that you sit with it and you gather the energy of the livingness of the plant, and there's enough for it to share with you. And you use that to enhance your own livingness, your own energy of life force. And he talks about practices of going out into nature and also imbibing and allowing the spirit of livingness of what grows around you to fill your whole energy body, so that you're living a new vibration. And that's what each of us is actually doing. We're raising our vibration to the level where, when this planet ascends to a whole nother vibrational level, to another dimension, we are in harmony with that raised vibration. And again, it comes down to making choices in every moment. I think it's time for me to pause and see if there's anybody who would like to ask or share anything. It's been like a train ride, a steam engine moving ahead with so much information. We'll be trying to find a way to present it in a coherent manner. And I'm sorry if I've been a little, full steam, but this is my first experience of this. So we have 5 minutes before 7 o'clock my time. If there's anything, it's time to have you share a little bit.
Hey, I've unmuted most people that I've been able to. If you have a question, you can also unmute yourself. Those of you who I can't.
There must be a way to raise your hand so Lauren knows that you want to speak.
I think they must get a notation to unmute.
Thank you, Raphael. That was so rich with information. And it's very confirming that the broadest message is that we are not alone and we're on the right track in living consciously in our community. And like you, I'm so grateful to be a part of a community who is paying attention. So I look forward to revisiting this information. It was a load of amazing material about our origins and how the Essenes align with what we're needing right now. I appreciate it very much and thank you.
Okay. Yes, any more? Do you have any questions? Finding ways to weave all this together into a comprehensiveness is quite a trick. However, the books, there's more, but the ones listed on my website and the ones that I've shown in the slides, you can jump in and find it an absolutely fascinating adventure. The one thing I'm going to recommend beyond anything else is that you read that book, the first one about the Essenes that I showed you, the regression one by Prentice and whatever the guy's name was. Because for me, when I actually experienced reading, I could feel the presence of Yeshua right there with me. I could feel what it was like for them to be in his loving presence, to want to just give their whole life to serve with him, to be part of his ministry. It was so rich to actually, Herman used to teach about visualizing the Christ and saying your mantra. But for me, it was always a concept. But when I read those books, I could feel him. He's been here with me every morning now, giving me mess. It just is so beautiful, so rich. It has totally changed my life. And if you get that same feeling from reading those books by those people, who experience what it was like to go back to that life and remember what it felt like. The feeling is so much more than the intellectualization of it. And for me, it really made Christ real. And the same with the Magdalene. Hi, Jacqueline. Somebody there? Am I talking still? Okay. Anyhow, that would be, a gift for you beside all these other books. The one that I read about Atlantis, that first one that I shared with you, it also changed my life. From it, I have this this affirmation. Your will be done, God, not mine, in me and through me. Show me what I must do this day, and let me be channel of your blessings to all. It's become my mantra every morning, and it came from that book. And it's part of the practice also of doing affirmations when you're in a meditative state of reaffirming. It's kind of like doing heart thread on yourself, affirming who you are and a whole new direction for how to be.
Well, Raphael, I would like to thank you for this amazing presentation. I'm looking forward to going into these books. I wrote some of them down and I'll go onto your website. But the interesting thing for me is the interconnection between these different time periods and different beings and different nationalities and different sects and religious organizations and awarenesses. It's really mind-boggling. And it also then brings me to the place of how long is it going to take for us to get it? You know, because I just keep saying to myself, you know, it's got to happen soon, doesn't it? You know, but I know that we know these things. It's just making the choice, as you say. So thanks for showing that and reflecting that to us. And your presentation was excellent. And I'm really happy to be part of a community that you're in.
Thank you. Yeah, and community is, you know, living on the land in community is actually
kind of scary. The window. Just a couple of months ago, she looked amazing.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear that.
I think it's Jacqueline, but I'm not sure she's talking to us.
Jacqueline, are you there? She's muted.
Huh.
Yeah, she's there. Jacqueline, are you there?
I am.
Please say what you were saying. We didn't catch it. You look like Sharon.
That looked like Sharon to me too.
Raphael?
Yes.
Can you hear it? Thank you so very much. I know some about the Essenes, and a lot of what you presented tonight created a kind of web of connection for me. And I too took some notes on some of the names of the books that you referred to, which I'm looking forward to exploring some more. So with a heartful gratefulness, I wish to thank you for creating this to share with all of us. Thank you.
So one thing I'd like to end with, I mean, we can keep going as far as I'm concerned, but there's so much material and this way of weaving it and also seeing how can we take this all to the next step, because the young people are the next step. That the communication between the elders and the new leaders is vital, and the establishing of living communities, because they're hungry for that too. But I feel like, you know, I will actually post my whole outline, as scatty as it is, on my website, and we can also maybe find a place on Soul Support Systems website where you can perhaps we can initiate some kind of ongoing dialogue and sharing of our experiences and our discoveries. To me, I would be so excited to find other hearts who are excited by this material and find the answers to some of the questions that are still being brought up by all these books I'm reading, because they don't all gel. They don't, you know, all the different stories about the Christ and the Magdalene and what happened or what didn't. There are so many versions, but there's an inner truth about it that I feel takes us beyond the dualism around it. So my sense is that what I felt I'm starting with this class is the beginning of the possibility of having an ongoing a group, an ongoing exploration that we can all be part of and that we can all do as a collaboration, as a cooperative thing. So let me know. You've got my info. You can do it through Soul Support too. And we'll do it, maybe a monthly Zoom hour where we share what we've been reading, we answer questions. But it is a tremendous weave, and it's there's a mystery, and there's also there's a truth within the mystery that is palpable. And I feel like it's very rich, and I would love to share it with you. So thank you so much.
Thank you, Raphael.
Namaste.
Thank you.
Aho.
Thank you, Raphael.
Yeah.
It was wonderful.
Thank you all.
Thank you so much.
Okay, so the recording will go out to everyone, or a link to the recording. We'll get that out. It posts, I think it takes a half a day to post, so I'll send that to you, Melinda, to send out.
Sounds good. Thank you.
People will sign up to get onto it, right?
They just get access to it, so they can go on and download it or just listen to it on the website there.
Okay, sweet.
And Lauren confirmed that the slides should show up since we recorded you on the main screen, Raphael. So the slides will be there front and center when they fall into place in your presentation. So that will be helpful to people. And we're inviting people generally and broadly to feedback with Soul Support and how they're using and benefiting from these classes and all of the materials. So we will continue to expand that, and your feedback and ideas there are welcome. We can do it.
I'll post it on my website too, a link for you.